oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rinse.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rinse.com.
Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Rick is back with us tonight, and in these very difficult times, it's always great to hear somebody who has transcended so much in his life with wisdom, insight, knowledge, and pure science. Rick is a wizard. Hello, Richard.
Good morning. It feels like it anyway. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, well, good enough. Okay, now if you look in guests under Rick's name, you'll see three items that I put there, and they're videos. One is the first one, which is very interesting. I started to watch it. We're going to talk about that. Catastrophic shift on the Earth 12,000 years ago. Did the Earth flip and reverse rotation after a CME, coronal mass ejection? Second is astronomer stunned by brightest gamma ray burst ever recorded. And third, what the government has decided to do and where they will build the caves. So what has the government decided to do and where will they build their caves? Now, the elite and the military have been building underground facilities in earnest for at least 50, 60 years. They've got enormous things underground. And I don't know that the public will ever find out about it until later on in the game. We'll see. But this first one, Rick, this pole shift thing is very interesting. And if you look at it, just cue that video up and look at the first couple of minutes and you'll see the guy has a round, what is a representation of the Earth, and he spins it in a certain direction, the correct rotational direction, and he puts a magnet up to it and it causes it to not just reverse direction, but to the North Pole becomes the South Pole. Now, if that happens, the planet will be largely destroyed in terms of what we think of it. Is that what happens in a pole shift? Does a pole shift mean whoop, upside down?
It's difficult to answer that question because while physics, everybody thinks that physics has the answers, really, we're only as good as our assumed truths. The example I've used previously, you know, if the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, the Earth's round. But if space is curved, I can, with tensor math, prove it's flat. Which one is it? And the correct answer is yes, because our concept of space, like time, is a construct limited to man's imagination. And the metaphors that I've used in the past with you is when I would say to you, how many ants are on your property and who's terraforming it more? And you realize I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't have believed it. Our senses are not receptors, they're filters. And we're receiving a lot more information than we're consciously aware of, because consciousness itself is a dream. There's dream states like lucid dreaming that have more content to physical reality than consciousness does, truthfully. Now, as a physicist, I'm going to say that I don't know. However, back in 1974, I was working with MRU and the Department of Interior out of Menlo Park. MRU was out of Washington, D.C. It was actually on Wisconsin Avenue. And I worked under Dr. Carl Schleicher, that many of you might metaphorically see him as the smoking man. And I'm the real Fox Mulder in some sense of it, because that's what I was doing for the military, Navy, was paranormal studies. Now, Ostrander and Schroeder came out with a book called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain. And if you have to remember, back then, we were more concerned about what the Russians were doing with our space race than we were about aliens. We knew about aliens. Area 54, Sedona, other places had happened, and there were alien, autopsies of that kind. But at that time, the big deal was about space and who got there first, Sputnik, that kind of thing. So they deployed me as one of their better physicists. I'm sorry?
1957, Sputnik.
Yeah, well, that's a long time ago. Yeah, that was old man DuPont when I was almost 16 years old. I did what I did for NASA when I was 16 was that I converted Greek mathematics into English code so that the women could understand the concepts of mathematics with Fortran and Algol and then later COBOL and then Fortran 4 and Engol, a number of other types of codes that came out of computer languages. At that time, we'd had machine and we're writing just straight code at that time, mostly mathematics. And nobody could understand it, Greek, so we changed it to English literature. And like and, or, and not, or nor, NAND logic. I took a course at MIT under a number of interests, Edward Everett Horton, others, that gave me nor, NAND logic, for example, was when we became object-oriented, and we were able to take an and, or not, or binary code that might have, 15 different programs and combine it into one program that was less than half a meg in information bytes. And it was so much more efficient. That's when the original concepts of code came in, and that's what I did. I was what they call a polymath, and I don't know how to explain how I can do it, but when I look at mathematics, I see things that I can't explain, but they're simple. In any case, that's when I first started. The study that I did out of Ostrander and Schroeder began with a man named Yanif, who had written a book on the lunar sex cycle of the female, that when a woman is born, an engram is set into her DNA that will determine when she ovulates. And because it was based on phases of the moon, if she were to move to any place on Earth differently, that ovulation cycle changed, and we had a form of birth control. The study I did was something way more, where the concepts of space were redefined into something that we will eventually now embrace, going from astrology into astronomy, and then it will be called cosmobiology, or the geometric relationship of celestial bodies. And right now, we have a geometric relationship with the planet Uranus, which in astrology is the higher octave of Earth. Every 11,700 and blah, blah years, 12,000 years approximately, there is a change in the Earth based on the planet Uranus, Earth, and the Sun. And because of astrology having an eight-year orb on that geometric alignment, we use the Sun's solar minimum as the trigger, like we would phases of the moon on Earth. And what I discovered going back in history with pole shifts was something like a 3 sigma error coefficient. That meant that when this alignment occurred, there was a 99.9975% probability of the event occurring. Okay. Now, that does not mean it's going to happen. That's simply based on physics and what we understand regarding time and events on Earth based on archaeology and anthropology. So at this juncture, what has happened to trigger this is in the last, since January, when that first X-band that came off that your advertisement talks about triggered Fukushima, we had one of those in January, and now we're getting more of them. And historically, never recorded in our normal band of history, going back, you know, for two to 4,000 years, because we're talking about every 12,000 years. And basically, what happens is that the core of Earth, which is molten, plastic, if you will, rotates, creating an electromagnetic field that you call magnetic, electro and magnetic. The magnetic fields are related to the core of Earth and how it spins. Last January, it stopped. Now, is it going to spin in the opposite direction?
It stopped cold. What stopped it? Do we know? Do we have a
guess? Don't know. We don't know. X-band, radiation from the sun, I don't know. It is historically based on a geometric alignment with the planet Uranus, which in my universe of physics, there's no known laws that will reach that far. So it's something we have not yet articulated, described, or understand in the field of physics, other than it's triggered by the heliosphere, the solar minimums of the sun, which are like clockwork, like the moon phases. The sun has solar minimums, and this is when we get these unbelievable bursts of gamma ray and X-ray off the sun that can be life-changing and or extinction event. Now, this doesn't mean it's going to happen. This is based just strictly on physics and what we know and what we don't know and what we can guess, but that's all it is, you know, limited to someone like myself's ability to comprehend what's going on. The reason they used me is I'm capable with mathematics to go beyond normal physics. They used me in 1971 to do the extrasensory perception studies when Edgar Mitchell went around the moon. Now, there are several things you need to understand. There is a protective belt around the Earth called the Van Allen belt,
right,
that is impossible for anything to go through it. And why they have the elaborate countdowns at Canaveral, now it's, you know, Texas and other places, where they go 5, 4, because before liftoff, they have to punch a hole through the Van Allen belt to get an astronaut through it, or you'll experience a Challenger event.
And how is that done?
Well, back then, it was done with missiles and that kind of thing, whereas that was one of the primary uses of HAARP. My understanding is we have something even more efficient than HAARP at this point. Did we actually land on the moon when we said we did? I don't know. I can tell you there's a high likelihood we did not, because as like all other things, there's plausible deniability, and who's most credible in getting into space first? Was it Sputnik, or was it blah, blah, blah? And landing on the moon, I don't know. There is a lot of conjecture because of, you know, the various movies that were out by, you know, that, right. that would stage things like that. When Edgar Mitchell went around the moon, he did do that. That did happen. I was there to do the ESP experiments. Why we going around the moon? We needed further distance than anything on the Earth. And we needed solid bodies that were like thicknesses of the Earth to determine if extrasensory perception was outside of time or not, and thickness, like densities of Earth and things of that nature. And that led to my first book that Nick Begich patroned for me, brought me out of retirement to write that book, later called ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis. Right. Now, why? Yeah, that book, by the way, is the first of many altered states of consciousness that will eventually be part of man's evolution beyond what he is today. There is a specific point in altered states. It's right there, not over there. It's right there. That when you go to that place, your ability in guessing increases 400 times over where you are now. Now, back then, ESP and hypnosis were pseudosciences. Today, they're not, because ESP is related to the gut and instincts, like a dog. You know, how did Jack Nicholson put it? I feed it bacon. Now, with that said, some new field theories that I'm writing that will supersede my holographic universe by almost 50 years is going to involve the multiverse and not theory, where I, instead of using fractals and information rather than space-time. The problem with quantum mechanics was that our definitions of space and time are so limited conceptually that when we take and create elementary particles, we find that there is an uncertainty that the more you know about one thing, the less you know about something else. That was Heisenberg. And what I'm discovering is the same thing with information, in that, you know, the way information would fold into or out of itself, that if you had enough, there's a theorem in information theory that states, if you have enough information to ask a coherent question, right, you have enough information to answer it, because the framing of the question is where the answer lies. That's information theory. In other words, in literalness, you can't get there from here. It would be like Simon says, you can go halfway to the door. You can get close, but with our conceptual abilities, we're very limited. So in terms of the core spinning and now stopping and possibly reversing, your video shows what happens if that core begins to spin in the opposite direction.
Well, if the planet, Rick, hold on. If the planet flips upside down, the North Pole becomes the South Pole, and the reverse. This is going to be a horrific pile of trash.
The Earth won't flip. The poles will shift magnetically, and that means
I understand that. But he was showing it
starts to spin in the opposite direction that it is now. That means at some moment, the Earth's going to stop spinning 24 hour. Now, if that's true, what do you think that's going to do to the continents? Just slowing down and then reversing its direction of spin.
I don't even want to think. I get the picture. Yeah.
Okay, then what I'm going to say on the West Coast is, when Mauna Loa goes off again, that will be your first warning. There's a volcano off of Crescent City that has no name that will set that volcano off, and that volcano will shift the plate 5 degrees. And I can tell you that when Mauna Loa goes off, that will be your first of a series of, what do you call it, dominoes that begin to fall down in a cascading of dominoes where the Earth will have a pole shift. And if that plate shifts 5 degrees, you can, on the West Coast, presume anything west of I-5, you know, freeway, is going to be gone in 4 hours. And there are
or every, underwater.
Well, I don't know if it's going to go underwater. Edgar Cayce says it will. In his predictions, who knows? We know that it will be extinction event. That means there will be an excessive amount of life force. Now, even if that does not happen, food right now is going to become probably your single most expensive resource, even over housing. The Mexican cartels are right now controlling all of the borders, and one of the reasons why Texas has told Biden they're going to leave the union, because he's not doing anything about that. Now, if Texas leaves the union, you can presume that the United States, as we knew it, will no longer exist. And there's evidence from a variety of other economic things that you can key off of. That's already occurred. And that by 2027, Alaska, Hawaii probably will no longer exist as it is. There will be a series of changes in the Midwest. You can go to a future map of America on a Google search, and you can see that the United States will most likely be cut in half by water. That means the entire Midwest will be underwater. Florida will be gone. Parts of Texas. Who knows? These are our best guesses from a scientific point of view. Now, that does not mean it's going to happen. It means I would, for example, recommend that everybody listening to me right now begin a victory garden, because right now, most every city, other than a few that I've worked with, like Chattanooga, produce less than 3% of the food they consume, and you're dependent on long haul, which on the West Coast has just been taken over by the Russian mafia. Now, long haul used to be Union and the Sicilian, and if you think the Mexican cartels were bad, the Russian ones run all the dispensaries on the West Coast now. They moved into Cave Junction recently here in Oregon. I can only guess what they're doing. California basically is owned by China now. All the ports belong to China.
Oh, California
and with the cartel,
is gone. I know.
Yeah, with the cartel running the Mexican border, I would say most of America's food, 40% of it, comes from that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And with
hold on, Rick. Hold on. Hold on. I got to pause. We'll come back and talk about this pole shift, whether it be a physical pole shift or a magnetic pole shift. That demonstration that guy made in that video was pretty upsetting. Real upsetting. Okay, hang on a minute. We'll come right back with Rick. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Rick Miller about pole shift. Now, we've all heard, I think I started hearing about pole shift in college, maybe before. But that can be a physical or a magnetic. And most pole shifts
are
apparently
magnetic. Well, it'll be both, actually, because with geographic changes and shifts on the plate, for sure, it isn't going to be a 180-degree flip, but there will be a flip, absolutely. Uh-huh. It's mostly magnetic because of the direction of the Earth, and its spin will be in the opposite direction.
Is
and
that
it's done that historically.
Right. Is that what happened in Antarctica to that continent?
Yes.
There was a flip,
yes.
And it got put in a very cold zone.
And at the time I visited Antarctica, it was interesting. I was there in 74 doing the bioluminescence studies. They hired me to figure out how the light worked in the cavern. And we went in through Thule Island and up in, and we're talking about an underground cave that was over a mile high. And I saw this Nazi base that looked like it had been bombed, and I think that was probably during the Kennedy era.
Wait a minute.
Further down.
Whoa. Where were you when you saw this Nazi base?
In Antarctica. In the cavern.
In the cavern.
And then further down was a Viking base that I saw that looked like it 14th century.
What did the Nazi base look like?
History books, but.
Yeah, hold on. Rick, can you tell me, please, what did the Nazi base look like? What did you see? Because this fits in with high jump and everything.
Yeah, 19 subslips, but they were destroyed. It looked like a nuclear weapon hit them. Looked like it had been nuked. And then the Viking base was just, it was in shatters. I mean, hardly anything survived. And further down was an artifact that was like a giant hole that went 100 miles straight down into the mantle. Now, at that time, we didn't have the technology to be able to go down straight down like that 100 miles. And my physics says that it's, you know, everything down there is in plastic format. I mean, the heat, everything like that. However, apparently Buzz Aldrin and others were able to do that recently, and they have technology that went down there. And I was told that the reason the island, we used to call it an island, but it's a continent, I guess, was that basically something woke up. They found something in stasis, and it woke up. Now, I don't know what that means other than Nephilim or something of that nature. I know I have news articles. I did an article for PBS. They discovered a skull that was huge in Pennsylvania back in, I think it was 1810 or 1820, somewhere right in there at the time that the Mormons were forming back in Pennsylvania and moving toward Utah. And that was that minister, that Baptist minister that went after his flock. It was his two sons that ran the Warburg, not the Warburg, the Smithsonian at that time. And that's where the skull was placed from the news reports that I have. And that doesn't exist anymore. Where is it? Well, my take on that was that it was dumped in the Atlantic Ocean to vet their father, because Mormon religion was based on a close encounter. They were trying to validate their father. There was a Methodist minister that was trying to get his flock back when Joseph Smith started, you know, putting that together.
Okay.
And
I can't resist. I didn't know you were down there and saw a Nazi base.
I've been to Antarctica. I was the physicist that woman hired. There was an anthropologist that put a team together, and my job was to figure out how the light worked and the bacteria on the wall and the what they call bioluminescence.
The luminescence, I got you. What did the base look like?
There are caves everywhere. What? That's why they call it inner Earth. I mean, on the East Coast, you can go all the way from Maine all the way down to Florida without ever coming above ground. Dennis Kucinich hired me once to visit eight of his bunkers that are independent of each other in four states. Out here on the West Coast, from at least the middle of Oregon all the way down into California, they're all interconnected now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all interconnected. The comm system from the old NORAD things.
Rick, this is too good of an opportunity. What did the base look like? Even though you say it was nuked, it was in
there was venom in it. It was so high, you felt like you were above ground. It was that large. And
what did it look like?
The only way we could go in, the way we went in, I don't know about other ways, the way we went in was from Thule Island. We staged it sub there, and then they took it straight in from into Antarctica, straight in from there. And there's an underground cave like there is in Los Angeles, you know. So
well, there was a claim that we let off a nuke in 1958 in Antarctica. And there's supposedly
well,
a picture of it.
Something happened because what I saw looked like an old Nazi base.
What does an old Nazi base look like? Rick, what does an old Nazi base look
well,
like? What did it look like?
It was like Bremerton or something. It was like a huge facility that could take in 19 ships, submarines, and buildings that were all slagged.
Wow. All right. That's pretty astonishing. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but we didn't spend much time there. We were interested in that hole because that was something that we, you know, humans, as I know it, never made that hole.
What are they doing with that now? That was some time ago you were down there.
I have no
idea. Put it to use?
I'm a GS-18. I'm 79 years old. I mean, you know, I was very active in the early years. Now I'm like, they can't even pay me anymore. So I just kind of oversee some of the bunkers. You tell me which state you want to live in, and I'll tell you where to go. We have, like, in Arapahoe, Arizona, there's a old Nike missile silo that's run by three families, 60-footer, running aquaculture, that's enough food to feed 4,000 people going to Alpha Centauri. What I'm going to tell you now is an extremely important formula. All inorganic salts to feed a hydroponic, aquaponic system in a closed system where you're in deep space can be one-third chicken manure, one-third rabbit manure, and one-third worm casings. And that was the first job I did when I came out of grad school with Boeing and Lunar Base Alpha 1, which is in South Park, and then later moved to Kent and became the Space Center. The Art Pilgrim was doing hydroponic at that time, and we had grading where the chickens were pooping through the floor, feeding chlorella, and then we had tilapia. At that time, we were using tilapia as a closed system for protein. Now, that's the distinction between a hydroponic system and an aquaponic system. Aquaponics does not need fish or use fish. It's basically you're working in floating water. And there's an aquaculture system out at Mile, there's lots of aquaculture systems now here just in Oregon, you know, out near Rogue River where I'm deployed now. But there's all kinds of hydroponic and aquaponic system, and you would be well advised to begin a victory garden and for off-season indoors to do an aquaculture, a very small aquaculture. You wouldn't even need half the size of your bed would be enough to create enough food for 40% of the food you need to consume. And once you did that, you have extra. You can barter for the things you need, like a cow or a pig or something like that if you're doing salmon, whatever, protein. Okay. Some people need meat because of their blood type, enzymes, and the way it digests things. But the place itself is huge, and I've seen other caverns like that over in China and down in the Philippines, in Micronesia. They have caverns like that, and they're interesting because the Earth has had several shifts like that, and that's what creates a lot of the things besides volcanoes, are these underground caverns where there's lots of water and, you know, that kind of thing. That's the other thing. Water and food are your two first primaries. How did Matt Stein, my partner, and I were doing urban survival skills workshops until his untimely death. And the last one we did back in, I think it was in Reno. No, Las Vegas. We were doing it in Las Vegas. We had like over 200 people, and mostly they were military and police. There were some civilians that took that. But basically, you have 3 minutes for air, 3 days for water, and 3 weeks for food. you can go a long time without food. Water, you need to replace. And I have a small workbook called Living Off the Grid, Can You Live Off the Grid for 30 Days, that runs down basics on that kind of thing, because I'm hoping that my talks and these footprints I'm leaving will save a few lives, because it's my humble opinion, Homo sapien and Homo GMO are extinct species. Basically, it'd be like Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal. The Homo GMO have had their immune system compromised. And the immune system, I mean, I remember when my mother sent me to school to get sick. And that immune system is going
to
be...
That actually used to happen for your younger listeners. It did.
Yeah, and the education thing, they're dumbing them down. Even when I was still in the Philippines in second grade, I had Latin. You know, sumus est, and then when I went to high school here in the United States, I mean, I had shop, I had home economics, we had, you know, all kinds of different things.
They had music appreciation, they had wood shop, they had electrical, they had all kinds of things, practical things,
you know,
pragmatic
one
things.
One of the things, my cousin Steve Miller had a thing called Pacifica, and they had a bus called the Caterpillar that went around, run by third graders, teaching first graders about the monarch butterfly and the entomology. And this old bus that's sitting out there now, what I'd like to do is make that a workbook for, where I strip that entomology out and make a mobile water testing laboratory run by third graders teaching first graders about water and how to pot it and test if it's potability, pH, and drinkability, and how to clean it. You know, that's what we should be doing for our children, as what I believe to be, in my humble opinion, our single most important natural resource. Neither you or I are going to be able to save this earth. It'll be our grandchildren if they get their shit together. And the thing is, we need to leave footprints, because what is about to happen is going to wipe everything out, knowledge base. It's like, metaphorically, it's like we've been here before. Previous epochs, we've had spaceflight, like the Fermana. What happened? I don't know. It's like we're in a petri dish, and we really don't have free will, which would imply full disclosure. What we have is a limited awareness, and that's being taken away from us with our educational processes now.
Right.
I don't have answers in that regard. I'm just going to try to leave some facilities.
Before we run out of time here, Rick has some extraordinary books, all right, amazing books, and The Non-Local Mind is certainly one of them. Which one would you like people to buy in this time and this age?
Well, it depends on your interest. In agriculture, I have written a 9-volume encyclopedia on alternative agriculture. And then there's books that are called Native Plant. Are you there? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm being cut off again.
I'm here.
Remember I told you? Yeah, it's happened to us when we were talking.
Yeah.
I have Native Plants of Commercial Importance, The Potential of Herbs as a Cash Crop. At one point, when I left the military before I got back in, I was possibly one of the largest exporters out of North America for non-storable commodities, native plants, that kind of thing. Last year I was marketing these things. I did 150 truckloads of ponderosa pine cone just to the East Coast. What color would you like your fire starter, ma'am? Everything in the woods is marketable. And one of the things I've discovered, I have 360 PDFs on alternative agriculture on different crops like comfrey, which, by the way, when comfrey is mixed with alfalfa, it contains all the amino acids necessary for a whole food for a cow. And, you know, I did that for Nakamura of Honda. They have in Osaka, their feedlots are 360-story buildings where the cattle never see the light of day. And they were rampant with disease until we discovered, That's where a lot of...
That sounds pretty horrible, actually.
Well, it's what's happening in our food system and why everybody is either obese or sick. Medicine, dentistry, pharmacy, they're all broken. And I don't have answers, so I started a process called Full Spectrum to be distinguished differently than targeted chemistry that the Germans do, or what they call standardized extract. When you take acetylsalicylic acid, it makes people sick, but if you took it from where it's extracted from, aspen leaf and aspen bark, for example, they have natural buffers in there, which means somehow God has arranged that when you work from natural sources rather than target chemistries where you just get a specific chemistry and you beef it up. For example, pharmaceutical mushrooms contain polysaccharides. And a polysaccharide is where you get your oxygen that would turn on your ATP or adenosine triphosphate. That's your immune system in the cell. And so, you know, there's processes like that. Psychedelic mushrooms, while they're toxins, the high, the chemistry, is very similar to your neurotransmitters. And when your brain or immune system sees these toxins coming into your body, it overproduces the look-alike neurotransmitter. And that is a second gut that is dialoguing with subtle bodies outside the physical body. At the moment of death, there is a 5-gram weight loss in the body, and it's not urine. What is it? And that's Chapter 7 called Time Travel and the True Nature of Cavitation in my Non-Local Mind book, because that is basically microtubules on the outside of the body with 5 grams of structured water, which leave the body at the moment of death. And basically, that's what you would call chi. Now, there's a whole series of others on studies I did. We had a film of a woman ripping a car door off, literally, to save her daughter in a flaming automobile. Now, the adrenaline did not make her bone and muscle stronger than steel. How could she do that? Well, the adrenaline put her in an altered state, which means it was not her in this universe. It was her from a multiverse, a different her that had made a different decision on what to put on her breakfast cereal this morning as a metaphor. And basically the laws of physics are different. And you can have the strength of 10, or using hypnosis, you can go to an altered state, a specific altered state, and have better guessing working with your gut. Now, that's, in my humble opinion, that's where man is going to evolve next, is the use of his mind, not as an absolute, but as a tool. And when I told you, is the earth flat or round, and I said the correct answer is yes, because if you look at the universe this way, then you have these doors to go through, and if you look at it that way, you have all these other doors to go through, or if you use your mind as a tool, you have access to both. You have access to all of the doors. Anything you could conceive of as God is not only less than halfway to God, it's what you personally are capable of doing if you were using your full potential, which you're not. There are 4 mammals on this planet that have higher technologies than man. Orca, who has a cerebral cortex that's twice the size of man, and that mammal's firing 60% of it, has access to 9/10 of the biosphere, where man, with his limited, all his technology, has access to only 1/10 of the biosphere. Who's superior?
Okay. All right, well, pretty mind-boggling. All right, tell us where to get the books, Rick Miller's books. Where do we send people?
Thank you, that's my only source of income now, RichardAllenMiller.com, A-L-A-N for my middle name, RichardAllenMiller.com. Okay. And the bookstore. And help yourself. The big one is Brain Drivers, which will allow you to reprogram your belief systems.
Wow. Okay. And the Non-Local Mind, how is it selling? That's a phenomenal book.
Very good. I just had a scientist from Russia say it's the most important thing she's read ever. The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe. And while I invented that concept 50 years ago, the multiverse lies between when a proton is a particle and when it becomes a wave. That is called the proton cloud. And what I'm using now is a form of knot theory where I'm taking 10 strings and an 11th string is a wormhole or an interconnecting of the 10, and then being a little Boy Scout, I'm tying knots in them.
Very good. All right, Richard Allen, A-L-A-N, Miller.com. All right, everyone, go and take a look at the books and buy one of Rick's brilliant books and treat yourself. Okay? All right, thanks, Rick. We'll talk again soon.
You bet.
Great work.
My pleasure. Yeah,
all
take
right.
care, buddy.
Good night. Dr. Miller, you're one of a kind. Okay, have a good weekend. Thanks for being here. Take care of yourselves, and we'll talk soon.